Hi everyone, Siobhan Chapman here, and welcome to the UBS Conversations podcast channel. Today we are joined by Erica Saramedda, head of DEI client engagement at BlackRock. I'm very excited to discuss with Erica the unique challenges the LGBTQIA community faces regarding their financial decision-making. Thank you so much for joining me today, Erica.
Thank you very much for having me during Pride Month.
Of course. So let's get started. Erica, first, I want to thank you for joining our show in celebration of Pride Month. And getting to know you through our prep sessions, I've come to learn that you have a unique journey that has led you to where you are today, both personally as well as professionally. To kick us off, would you mind sharing your story with our listeners?
Yeah, I always joke. I said I changed careers, I changed genders, and I changed hairstyles. That's my joke for the day. It started probably 27 years ago. I was an intern at Merrill Lynch. Got my way into the door of corporate America. And then, of course, during the merger acquisition of BlackRock in 2006, I then joined through via MLM. So when you look at my, what they call length of service in the industry, it's 26 plus years. So during that journey, I actually started out in sales. I was in variable groups. I did IPOs. I did sales training, sales management, sales technology. And probably around 2016, when I was in that career transition, that's when life decided to take a little bit of change personally, and I decided to do a gender transition. When I look back at my personal career, overlaying with my own career journey or personal growth myself, I think it was a pivotal point in time. It was 2016. And at that time, BlackRock was going through its own cultural change as well, too. And Larry, our CEO, was a steward of change. And also, there were things that were happening inside the firm. We went dress down for the first time. We want flexible time off, unlimited vacation days, which was great, right? Something I was not used to. But then when I heard Larry come on and talk about coming to work as your true authentic self, I thought, wow, wouldn't that be a hoot if I came in as me? Which is really a secret I was harboring for quite a long time, probably 30 plus years at that time. So I decided to do that. Having said that, I had a conversation with a senior leader at BlackRock in mid-2016. I talked to HR, and lo and behold, after finally having that conversation with my partner, my wife at the time, who of which we had three children, I decided to make that change. Now, at home, it was a little tumultuous because at home, unfortunately, my wife did file for divorce at that time. Ironically enough, now post-divorce 2018, we're now dating for 2.5 years. So it does have a happy story at home. It also has a happy story at work, I think, too. And what I ended up finding out is it was actually easier to transition at work than I thought it was going to be. And what ended up happening was it was an experiment. I joke that sometimes during the 2017 timeline, it was like being the class of 2017 because I met other folks at other organizations, whether it was different industries outside of financial services that were the first in their firm to do a gender transition. And I think we were all trying to find out what do medical benefits cover?
Right.
How do you change your identity internally? Multiple pictures, emails. It was a lot to learn. It was interesting, and you hear this often in the world of DEI and in the world of different marginalized communities. I was the only one. So I was actually the only one at that time.
Right.
Which was interesting.
Thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I love that BlackRock has a head of DEI client engagement. We know it's important to engage with members of the LGBTQIA community, but you had some interesting data I'd love for you to share that really solidifies this impact that this community has had. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, let me give you a little backdrop. I mean, in the current role, which I do now, so for some educational purposes, what I do now is I engage multiple types of clients from retail to institutional, a lot of institutional clients on multiple facets of diversity, equity, inclusion, right? And sometimes it's for education. Sometimes it's for due diligence because, we're not a diverse-owned firm, but we're doing our part to move that issue inside of society at times. And what we want to do is ensure that, we're doing our best part as also a fiduciary, is what our primary role is. At the same time, about 7 years ago, what I learned is that there was a need in a community to have some financial advice. And what ended up happening was, prior to me getting this role 3 years now, I started to do this off the side of my desk. And I started to do some research. And having come out in 2017, I met a number of folks in the city here and across the country mm-hmm. who were financial advisors. When I met them, you know, a number of those folks happen to identify as the LGBTQ community. And what I found that is some of them were catering to the community, but some of them were not. And even mm-hmm. if you looked inside the community in and of itself, sometimes the community, sometimes the L and the G don't understand the T, or likewise, right? So I thought, wow, wouldn't it be interesting to find out what the challenges are, understand some of the financial numbers around it, and then ultimately maybe help educate on this topic.
Right.
And after doing that, what ended up happening was we had a consortium of advisors, and we originally wanted to do a client education seminar, which we do have, but ultimately what ended up happening was we said we need to educate advisors.
Right.
Why? Because it's not a matter of if, it's when it will happen. And when will that person who may look a bit different mm-hmm. walk into the office? Or think about it this way. We always talk about this giant wealth transfer from generational to generation.
Right.
Some of the numbers there are millennials are expected to inherit close to $73 trillion in the coming years. Mm. In addition, the youngest generation that's up and coming right now is that Gen Z.
Right.
They're going to earn about $32 to $35 trillion in the coming years. Well, there's also some parameters around how they identify in the population in the U.S. So let me give you, this is where I go a little stat heavy, if you don't mind.
Of course.
Right now, there was some recent research that came out that said in the U.S., approximately up to 10% identify as LGBT community mm-hmm. plus. That's what we know. That's who people who volunteer that information. And not everyone voluntarily discloses that. And what you tend to see is that younger generations identify more. Matter of fact, those numbers for Gen Z are closer to 25 to 28%. But as you go down through the generations, millennial, Gen Xer, the baby boomer, they go down, right?
Okay.
So the identification out there is continuously going up, right? At the same time, when we look in today, based on the numerical research, the U.S. holds about 30%, the U.S. holds 30% of the $30 trillion for those folks that identify. So think about this. If we look at all the wealth in the U.S., roughly $9.5 trillion is held by the LGBT community just in the U.S. And I can tell you from the research that we've done over the past 5 years, that's gone up from 7 to 7.5, now pushing close to 10%. So this is where it gets real interesting, too. If you look at the purchasing power every year, the community, the LGBTQ plus community, tends to spend almost $1 trillion as well, too. Mm. That's about 20 to 25% of the spending of the LGBTQ population in the world.
Wow.
Okay, so you've got these huge pockets of dollars and being spent, right? So it sounds like an interesting fact. Now, we go back to what I opened up with, and that's those millennials, right? And if you apply those inherited dollar amounts and the new generation earning power amounts, right? This is what astounded me when I looked at some of the numbers and do the math. If those who identify today as millennials identify as LGBTQ+, they're going to inherit $12 million in wealth. And almost $9 to $10 trillion for Gen Z will generate. So it far exceeds the numbers we have today.
Right.
So I go back to my statement, it's not a matter of if, it's when it's going to happen, and when those folks walk into an office of an advisor and need help, or are the children of current clients of advisors today.
Thank you so much for sharing those numbers. So I want to piggyback on the last point that you made. Does this community face unique challenges that financial advisors should be mindful of?
Yeah, and when you dig deep, I think what you find is the spending habits. And 65% of the LGBTQ plus population have typically bad spending habits. We don't save as much, typically. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they call it therapeutic spending. It's because, hey, we've got the money we've gotten here. We felt discriminated against. We need to now feel empowered that we've had this opportunity to earn some income. So this is where we need the help, right? This is where we need the financial help. The other challenge is still out there in the workplace. And in today's market environment, 75% of those in the community still experience discrimination, quite frankly. Some of the, about 50+% reported that it affects their work environment and potentially their career aspirations, which ultimately comes down to dollars, right?
Right.
So you have that situation. As a matter of fact, 30+% have left the workforce or left a job environment because they said, I'd rather just leave here and go find another job for less money because I can't operate. Now, listen, it may be not your firm, maybe not my firm, but that could be the experience at other organizations and other industries still at, in today's environment, right? So that's part of the challenge. And the other thing is, for those that really made it to the top roles, they remained closeted, right? 71%. Mm. There are some CEOs out there who identify now, but those who remained closeted, they had to in order to get to that level.
Right.
And then come out later in life when you've already demonstrated you have that will and grit to do it, which is unfortunate, right? And I think the other things are the other things to consider are the health challenges and expenses. There may be cases where you need medication. If you're transgender, you may have to deal with surgical procedures, medications as well too. And sometimes if you're separating, you may have lack of insurance coverage or not understanding your insurance coverages, which is something that really you need to really know and know what you have available to you.
Right.
Right. And then I think the last big bucket of this really comes down to, you know, the ostracization of by family members. It happens. And in, you know, there's a number of organizations specifically here in New York that cater to the youth, but 45% of LGBTQ plus youth have attempted suicide this past year. That's a lot. It's a high number.
Right.
And about 28% of them experience homelessness at the same time. But it also affects the other end of the spectrum. And it's interesting because if you look at those numbers of those folks who are now in the baby boom plus era, you know, there are 70s, 80s. There are folks who have gone to retirement communities or homes, but then they also become ostracized as well, too, because sometimes the senior peers don't accept them and they've had to figure out how they have to move out of this communal housing now back to a solo situation.
So given these unique set of challenges, what advice do you have for advisors who are looking to engage more deeply with this community?
Yeah, I think first and foremost is just understanding the community and being authentic about knowing the community.
Right.
I mean, there's countless resources out there, and I'm not going to name them here, but I think that's probably one of the best things you could do. And especially a lot of the advisors I know either are members or have members in their offices who can leverage the knowledge that they have and understand. And it's interesting because in the presentation I talked to about what the acronym LGBTQIAP actually means, understanding the pronoun usage. And this is something that's very prevalent, especially among younger generations, is their correct usage of pronouns.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I get that from some people my age, like, why do I need to use pronouns, right? It's just a form of respect. It's understanding. That little difference can make the difference of them walking out your door.
Right.
Right. So that's one thing. I think the other thing is being vulnerable. Perhaps there are some shared experiences, and this is where, you know, there are people that came to me when I came out and said, listen, can I talk to you a minute? And they wanted to bond because they had a family member, a child perhaps, a relative, a parent who came out in some form or fashion, and maybe sharing those experiences. And then a lot of times it's also coming down to following their lead when you're talking to someone. I think you need to understand in a sense of how you engage and how much that person wants to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
There are times, especially for a financial advisor, if you have a couple, same sex, queer, whatever it may be, coming to you, they may be coming out to you, and they may be the only, you may be the only person that they've come out to.
Right.
There may be family members that don't even know this, that they're a couple. Right. So you have to be sensitive to that too. And then I think owning up to mistakes, they happen. I think for me, this happened at work. You know, I was a known commodity at work for a number of years. People misgendered me. When you're going through a transition, I always joke about the ugly Betty stage. It happens. You know, and people may call you by your old name, your dead name. You know, and I think for me, I'm a little thicker skinned, but some people aren't.
Right.
So you need to be sensitive to that. And I think, you know, probably one of the most powerful things is to be a vocal ally. And I always say an active ally, a proactive ally. I think for anyone, if you hear that or see this, you know, maybe there's someone who just left the office, right? And you have another advisor who's like, who was that? What client? you know, I think that's where you need to come about. I actually had this happen to me. I found that 4 years later that someone came to my aid. I never knew about it, but it was nice to hear that probably 6 years ago, someone stood up for me and I never knew about it. And they didn't want to take accolades for it. It was just a matter of fact of doing the right thing and staying the course. And I think the final thing I'll mention is you see this a lot in businesses. Of course, we see it during June, but get a flag. You know, there are advisors who do have a pride flag in their office along with the American flag. It's great. It just sends that visual signal. It's a safe place sometimes. And some members of the community can understand that when they see that, when I know that it's okay to talk and this advisor is accepting and I can maybe expose myself or expose my financial situation, which may be not the best.
So, Erica, thank you again for being so open and showing your authentic self during this conversation. I'm sure some of our listeners can identify with your journey. Do you have any advice for them?
So I think the best thing for me is being authentic to myself. It really helped me with my career. And I think there are a lot of times you always hear these stories that people who harbor these secrets, you can't be your optimal self. You can't be your best self. It's challenging.
Right.
And hopefully you can find an environment where you can be your authentic self, as I go back to when I heard Larry make that statement in 2016. At the same time, I think you also need to prove yourself. You continuously work just as hard, if not harder than other people. And we hear that from a lot of marginalized communities. Sometimes I need to work harder in order to be recognized. But I think it's important to work and not just be known for being a different person in the workplace, but being a good contributor to your work. And I also think, look, we get a lot of mentors and sponsors along the way. And I think if the audience knows there's a difference, right? The mentor is going to show you how to do the work. The sponsor is going to be an advocate for your career and be that person who's not in your room, right? Mm-hmm. And it's critical. And you can find great sponsors through employee networks, you know, maybe, or business resource groups that you may have in your firm. I did that. That's how I made connections across the firm. The one thing, though, and this is sometimes I talk to some of the members of our community, don't be afraid to engage that cisgender white male. Right?
Right.
It's a two-way learning street, in my opinion. I think there's sometimes apprehension, and then we don't want to associate with the general population, but I feel the learning should be bipartisan.
Absolutely.
Right? It really should be. And it's almost like reverse mentoring in some cases, because when I look about in my career, I did just that, and those people were also very critical to helping me get promoted throughout my career and become a managing director at BlackRock. So I think that is one of the things, is that educational aspect, and education, in my opinion, is also the key to fighting ignorance as well.
Thank you so much again, Erica, for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit about my journey.
This presentation is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. Neither UBS Financial Services, Inc. nor any of its employees provide tax or legal advice. You should consult with your personal tax or legal advisor regarding your personal circumstances. In providing wealth management services to clients, we offer both investment advisory and brokerage services, which are separate and distinct and differ in material ways. For information, including the different laws and contracts that govern, visit ubs.com/workingwithus. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG, member FINRA, SIPC.